This is Chair Ruth Richardson. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Hassan's present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe is present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan is excused. Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott?
Present.
Representative Erdahl? Representative Erdahl? Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, present.
Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Isabel. Next up on the agenda, we have approval of the minutes. Representative Edelson, have you had an opportunity to review the February 23rd, 2022 minutes?
I have, Chair, and I'll move those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. All in favor of the Edelson motion, please unmute and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. I am going to transfer the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Hassan so we can move into bill presentations.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. I move House File 3251 to be referred to the General Registry. Members will have a time certain vote on this bill at 1:20. Chair Richardson, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 3251 would allow a charter school that serves at least 90% students with a primary disability of deaf or hard of hearing to provide an enrollment preference to students who are eligible for special education services and have that same primary disability. The school would not be able to limit admission based on the child's eligibility for other special education services. Metro Deaf School was established here in 1992, and it serves students who are deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing. And today I have with me Dr. Susan Lane Outlaw to testify in support of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Susan, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Dr. Susan Lane Outlaw, and I'm the Executive Director at Metro Deaf School. Thank you, Chairperson Richardson and committee, for allowing me to have this time to talk. I want to take just one quick minute to read our mission statement for the school. Metro Deaf School promotes academic excellence and social well-being for deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing students using an ASL English bilingual approach. Our primary purpose is to empower our students to develop the skills and knowledge to succeed as global citizens. The reason I read this is because that has been the mission of the school since we were founded. We've been open almost 29 years. We're one of the oldest charter schools in the state. We do serve deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing students, and all of our curriculum is focused on that bilingual approach using American Sign Language and English. 70% of my staff are deaf and use ASL primary as their primary language. This gives the students role models. It also gives the students a sense of they have access to everything around them. What we learn in school is not just what we learn in the classroom, but incidental learning as well. So kids can see other teachers talking about planning for this activity or that, or problem solving. They get to see that, whereas if they were in a different environment, they wouldn't have that. We want to make sure that we can maintain that, make sure that we can foster those language development, but also that social development of students. We also are very different in the aspect of about 65% of our students are placed by their resident districts, meaning the resident districts don't have a program they feel meets the needs of those students. It's a very low incidence disability. So we maintain relationships with those school districts and provide education as a federal setting for those students and those districts.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Lane Atlow. Our next testifier is Sarah Clarstone. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Sarah Clarstrom. I am both a parent of a student and a board member at Metro Deaf School. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today, Chairperson Richardson and committee. So I am in support of HF 3251 as it's extremely critical in order for MDS to continue in its operation of serving and meeting the needs of deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing students. MDS enables deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing students to have full access to language and information, not just from the teachers and peers, but everyone in the school. It is an ASL environment, and the majority of its staff are deaf, deafblind, or hard of hearing, as Susan mentioned as well. That enables them to serve as role models, professional educators, and service providers for all of its students. We use ASL to communicate all the time. As I mentioned, I'm a parent of a first grader here at MDS. My daughter is an active participant in her classes and is active in many of the extracurricular activities that MDS provides. She is thriving and learning and having fun just being a kid because of her access to ASL. She is a confident and fiercely brave girl that will help her in whatever she decides to do in her future. She has made many friendships that I hope will continue throughout her life and has older student role models that guide her at times. All of these things would likely have been more challenging had she been in an alternative setting that didn't primarily serve deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing students. And to no fault of any educator, peer, and the like, I would worry that she would be unintentionally isolated and lose her confidence and braveness to learn, share ideas, and make friendships if she were in an alternative setting. So I am asking that you do support HF 3251 as it would classify MDS to enable them to continue as it has for nearly those 30 years to serve deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing students. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next is member questions. I don't see any hands up. Okay. If there are no questions, Chair Richardson, you have the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to ask for support. As it was mentioned, Metro Deaf School has been doing this work since 1992 here, and it has been a great support to many within the deaf community. So thank you for the last word.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Chair Richardson renews her motion to refer House File 3150 to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that. Can you say that again?
Aye.
Thank you. Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Druskowski?
Aye.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan is excused. Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilik?
Aye.
Madam Vice Chair, there are 18 ayes and one excuse vote.
With 13 ayes and one excuse vote, the motion prevails and House File 3151 is referred to the General Register. And at this time, members, I'm going to give the online gavel back to Chair Richardson. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Up next, we have House File 3401, which is the department bill. I move House File 3401 to be laid over for further consideration. Members, this is the governor's proposed policy changes for education. The Department of Education staff will provide a walkthrough of the bill, followed by public testimony, and then member questions will be answered by MDE staff. I have a number of department folks lined up to testify, and we will start with Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Heather Mueller, and I have the pleasure of serving as Commissioner for the Department of Education. Thank you for having us join your committee today. My team and I are happy to be here to share details about the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's 2022 Education Policy Package. This policy bill is predicated on our Due North Education Plan and seeks to work toward the goal that every child receives a high-quality education, no matter their race or zip code. It focuses on centering our students in all that we do and builds Minnesota's world-class education through a safe and welcoming environment with caring and qualified teachers so that students, as unique individuals, are seen, valued, and heard as they come into our school buildings every day. In order for our students to access a world-class education and succeed academically, we must ensure that Minnesota's educational systems and structures provide the support needed to meet their unique needs. Defining and implementing a multi-tiered system of support, MTSS, creates a continuous improvement framework for ensuring positive social, emotional, behavioral, developmental, and academic outcomes for every student. The MTSS framework was created in collaboration with a number of our education partners, and it provides a foundation for the work that can be done with the Minnesota MTSS proposal in the governor's supplemental budget. It provides clarity and consistency for districts and schools around MTSS, while also making sure that this clarity and consistency leads to equity in practice. It also means that it is incumbent on us to provide students an education that allows them to see themselves in what they are learning so that it reflects their diverse background and prepares them to live in a connected world and contribute to a global economy. While this evidence-based Minnesota MTSS framework is a proven strategy to support overall student success, it must be implemented in a safe and welcoming environment. We know that students need to be in the classroom to succeed academically, and they need to be in a safe and welcoming environment. Every minute that students miss of instruction, especially the on-time and in-order science and literacy in the early grades, has a detrimental impact on their learning and subsequent achievement. That's why the implementation of non-exclusionary discipline practices in grades K through 3 is paramount to student success and closing the achievement gap. As an educator, I have always been very clear on what my work is. It's to teach. Given this, I think it's important to note the distinction between discipline and punishment. Discipline focuses on teaching the student how to make a different choice next time and guiding the behavior to avoid it happening again. Punishment focuses on making a student suffer for breaking the rules and does not teach alternative behaviors. Our discipline incident reporting system data is evidence that our Black students, American Indian students, and our students who receive special education services are suspended and expelled at a higher rate than their peers. Before the pandemic, students with a disability were twice as likely to be suspended or expelled as students without a disability. Black students were 8 times more likely to receive exclusionary discipline compared to their white peers, and American Indian students were 10 times more likely. This disproportionality, particularly for our Black students, our American Indian students, and our students receiving special education students, means that students are in class for less time and the achievement gap widens. Schools with increased use of punitive discipline practices report decreased academic performance, attendance, and more negative school climate. Research demonstrates that students who are suspended are more likely to experience academic challenges, grade level retention, drop out of school, experience an arrest, and may be incarcerated. All of this impacts our students not only in that moment, but can also impact their life trajectory, long-term employability, and access to economic upward mobility. This policy language works in tandem with investments made by the legislature and the governor to support professional development in non-exclusionary discipline practices, alternatives to suspensions, and model discipline policies. Our job is to teach, not punish. And because we know better, we must do better. If we didn't know it before, this pandemic has demonstrated the need to support our students' mental health and social emotional learning. While many schools are already providing mental health support and have implemented social emotional learning instruction, this bill makes it clear that all students must have access to these supports, and our families must know that their students' unique needs can be met. In addition to addressing discipline practices that created disparate impacts on specific student groups, we must also address practices that historically diminish our students and our families. One example of addressing this issue within this bill is ensuring that consultation between Minnesota's 11 tribal nations and our schools occurs to ensure that schools that use American Indian names and or visual depictions as mascots are culturally appropriate and respectfully represent the American Indian community, both historically and currently. Another example clarifies the right of American Indian students to wear culturally significant regalia, such as eagle feathers, at graduation ceremonies. All of these help to create a safe and welcoming environment for all students. And without our qualified teachers in those classrooms to help to create these environments, they will continue to be just classrooms. And that's why caring and qualified teachers is the third prong in meeting the needs of our students. We know that students need to see themselves in who is teaching them, and when students learn from a diverse teacher, all students benefit. That is why I'm proud that this bill supports the work of the Teachers of Color and American Indian Teacher Coalition. We're grateful for the coalition's partnership and their dedication to increasing the number of racially and ethnically diverse teachers in our classrooms, and that these classrooms foster culturally inclusive practices. Finally, this bill makes timely and relevant policy changes that ease administrative burdens on schools, reflect the changing landscape of learning mediums, raises up and acknowledges the role school libraries play in student literacy and technology access, and prioritizes young children most in need of early learning scholarships. I'm proud of the work that went into this bill and includes many important provisions that ensure our students continue to be centered in our work, our practices, and our policies. It ensures that they receive a world-class education in a safe and welcoming environment with caring and qualified staff. This bill acknowledges and honors the diversity of our students, families, and staff by creating a continuous improvement framework to support positive social, emotional, behavioral, developmental, and academic outcomes for every student, by creating opportunities for all students to see themselves in what they are learning, by addressing practices that historically diminish our students and families, by keeping students in the classroom through alternatives to suspension, by diversifying the teaching profession, by promoting policies and that practices that seek to increase transparency and accountability, and by decreasing administrative burdens for our schools. I believe we have many shared goals and an opportunity to act boldly to enact common sense policy changes. Thank you for giving our team the chance to present this policy bill to you today. And with that, I'd like to hand it over to Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham.
Thank you, Commissioner Mueller. Assistant Commissioner Burnham, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Good morning, committee members. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education. And I'm going to be sharing with you our proposals, and we're going to start this morning with our proposals under world-class education. As the commissioner mentioned, multi-tiered systems of support plays a key role in our work at the department, and we have done extensive stakeholder engagement and have defined what multi-tiered systems of support is and would like that added to the statute. Our next proposal is intended to result in a continued effort to offer universal early childhood screening to all Minnesota children, including those families who request the virtual option with a parent report tool. This may be due to continued COVID-19 related health concerns. Our next proposal is would require voluntary pre-K and our School Readiness Plus programs to submit entry and exit data for all children enrolled under the VPK and SRP program, and enabling MDE to collect more robust assessment data and provide a more thorough analysis to stakeholders and policymakers who have expressed an interest in better understanding the impact of these programs. And last on this slide is addition to our early learning scholarship proposal in adding children with incarcerated parents to the criteria for prioritizing eligibility. continued with world-class education. The arts is the only required standard area that gives options to local standard development. Most districts use the state standards. So to have the arts as rigorous as other content areas, it should be consistent with other content areas, eliminating the local academic standards and be required in the standard state standard definition. In addition, the K-12 academic standards in art exist for five arts areas: dance, media arts, music, theater, and visual arts. However, media arts is not currently listed as one of the arts areas for elementary and middle schools in the statute. This creates conflict for districts who by statute are required to offer at least three arts areas and have students take two art areas. Since media arts and visual arts hold the same license, it would allow flexibility for teaching staff to provide more arts opportunities. As the next bullet would codify in statute MDE's authority around academic standards. And the last proposal on this slide would clarify language and enhance guidance for districts and charter schools to identify students for gifted education services, changing the title from gifted and talented programs to gifted and talented programs and or services makes clear the ability of school districts and charter schools to offer services rather than formalized programs. And our next slide under world-class education involves our work with Indigenous students. Minnesota Classrooms has one of the largest achievement gaps for Indigenous students. Embedding Indigenous education for all in academic standards creates the need for the curriculum and instruction to have experience that reflects our tribal nations and provides support for Indigenous students. In 2021, the department introduced an Indigenous Education for All bill in collaboration with the tribal partners. The next proposal would allow districts and charter schools that serve over 100 American Indian students would provide American Indian culture and language classes in an effort to provide a welcoming and inclusive environment for our most underserved students. The importance of this inclusivity in the school community is especially vital for our American Indian students. And lastly, under world-class education, and we are proposing to embed ethnic studies in all academic standards and compulsory education. We know that Minnesota classrooms are becoming increasingly diverse, and this would create and creates a need for the curriculum and instruction to have experiences that reflect the diversity of the classroom and for Minnesota students to see themselves in their daily learning experiences. And with that, Chair Richardson, I will turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Thank you for your testimony. Assistant Commissioner Graff, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Stephanie Graff. I'm an Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Education for the Office of Educational Opportunity and glad to be here. I'm going to start with just a few of the proposals related to modifying and updating the Online Learning Act. So we know that the pandemic has dramatically changed the landscape and interest level among students, families, school districts to engage in online learning options. Under this proposal, online learning would remain an optional program for students and families. However, it would allow online learning to be an instructional delivery model that a district or a charter school could choose to provide to their own enrolled students and would remove the step of needing MDE administrative approval. It really would allow MDE to focus our role on professional development, training, evidence-based practices, and ongoing support around effective online learning options for students. Supplemental online learning providers would still receive approval through the MDE process. These are courses that are taken in place of a course period at a local school district or charter school that is provided by a supplemental learning provider. And so again, we would maintain MDE approval for providers that are offering these course opportunities, oftentimes for students in regions or across the state. And so to the slide, all LEAs would be able to become online learning providers starting in the 2023-24 school year. And so the effective date gives us some time to prepare and support our school districts and charter schools for the transition. Instructors of online learning must be licensed Minnesota teachers and must use curricula aligned with Minnesota state academic standards. There are student protections as well as explicit alignment with districts' graduation requirements. These are not changes in practice, but we do want to be clear that statutes on licensure, curriculum, student supports, particularly for our students with disabilities and our English learners and other areas, still absolutely apply to students that are enrolled in online learning programs. We also propose adding online program to the definition of education site to be clear that education sites can be both online or traditional brick and mortar schools. And also, we also propose creating an option for online learning for students in residential care and treatment facilities, just to be sure that students that are in these facilities have the same opportunities to engage in online learning should they choose to meet course requirements as any other students across the state. And then continuing on, really thinking about post-secondary enrollment options for students and reducing the withdrawal and absence period to 10 days when a student withdraws or is absent from a post-secondary enrollment option or PSEO course. This is currently at 14, and we propose reducing it to 10 and then also clarifying that it's 10 business days. Just as a reminder, this is what triggers the statutory requirement for MDE to not submit payment to the institution for a particular course for a student if they're not enrolled. Another technical clarification within our career and technical education area to ensure that agriculture includes the food and natural resources pathway. This is a correction to really align with the federal career cluster terminology that is commonly used across the country. And then lastly, on this slide, really propose clarifying students with limited or interrupted formal education, oftentimes referred to as SLIFE students. There is a definition in statute. The definition was added in 2014. And as we've worked with districts over a number of years, we propose clarifying and streamlining this definition. There are redundancies in some of the criteria, and there are criteria where districts have been unable to implement. And so we propose establishing a fixed threshold of 2 years less schooling when defining limited or interrupted education for our English learners that are SLIFE students. Shifting into our policy proposals to ensure a safe and welcoming environment and really thinking about our statutes around restrictive procedures and policies around non-exclusionary discipline. First, we propose clarifying that restrictive procedures apply to all children in schools, not just children with disabilities or students receiving special education services. And so we know restrictive procedures are for emergency situations and when immediate intervention might be needed to protect a child or other individuals. And we want to be sure that these provisions in statute are inclusive of all students across the state. This includes affording students not receiving special education services to also be entitled to the same debrief and assessment meetings after the use of a restrictive procedure. And moving forward, thinking about prohibiting suspension of students in kindergarten through grade three and really focused on intentionally keeping our youngest learners in the classroom. We know this is critical to build off of what the commissioner said at the beginning of the presentation. It's critical to school and life success and has a particular impact on young students of color, Indigenous students, especially young Black boys who are often on the receiving end of exclusionary discipline practices. We want to make sure our focus in these early ages, in these early grades, are in helping very young students regulate behavior and learn classroom coping skills. We also propose prohibiting the use of exclusionary practices to address attendance and truancy issues. And then propose additions to increase clarity in statute around the definitions for non-exclusionary discipline, around in-school and out-of-school suspensions, and pupil withdrawal agreement as well. Lastly, on this slide, really proposing clarification that charter schools are subject to the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act, including alternatives to pupil suspension requirements. And moving forward, really want to focus on increasing reporting mechanisms as well. And so requiring pupil withdrawal agreements to be reported to MDE, and also requiring that transmitted educational records include pupil withdrawal agreements. And so these agreements are agreements between districts and districts or schools and parents or guardians ensures that they have the opportunity to withdraw a student from school to avoid expulsion or exclusion dismissal proceedings. Next, modifying the alternative education services statute to include non-exclusionary discipline requirements. So really clarifying that alternative education services must be offered when a student is suspended for more than 5 consecutive school days. Updating the term alternative education services to include non-exclusionary policies and practices, and really want to be sure that some of the same alternatives that are offered before a student is dismissed are also available after a student is suspended. And this also includes ensuring students have access to makeup work. And then thinking about requiring, you know, and enhancing district stakeholder engagement for discipline policies, and really focusing on ensuring MDE's guidance includes direction on how to equitably engage stakeholders to revise discipline policies. And lastly, on this slide, allowing for community involvement in complaint procedures. So we would propose ensuring that district school discipline policies allow for a procedure by which a member of the school community may use to file a complaint regarding the use of discipline policies and to seek corrective action. And this really would allow for districts to help families better understand their systems and supports around discipline and really think about genuine partnership, right, between families and school districts to meet the needs of children in a really collaborative manner. And MDE certainly can provide support and training in this area as well. And then thinking about requiring our world's best workforce and achievement and integration strategic plans to include more emphasis on cultural responsiveness and inclusion. And so a proposal to add language to make Minnesota schools more culturally responsive, inclusive, and respectful learning environments and work environments for our educators, and then for our students and school staff and broader community. This is also directly connected to a related proposal to add cultural responsiveness to teacher and principal development systems that Adosh will talk about in a few minutes. Our bill also includes an opportunity to strengthen the Safe and Supportive Schools Act, really thinking about clarifying the requirement around implementation of social emotional learning practices and simplifying and reducing confusion and emphasizing social emotional learning as a primary prevention approach to reducing bullying, improving school climate, and building students' knowledge and skills to deal with difficult situations, whether that be academically or socially. And then requiring MDE to develop and maintain resources to assist schools in implementing evidence-based social emotional learning practices. And MDE has done much of this. So this really would be codifying and expanding the work that the agency has done to support this within our School Climate Center. And then lastly, clarifying that post-secondary institutions providing post-secondary enrollment or PSEO opportunities to students may not base admission decisions on a student's race, creed, color, religion, national origin, sex, age, marital status, public assistance status, sexual orientation, disability, or gender. And with that, I think I will turn it over to our Government Relations Director, Adosh Uni.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Graff, for your testimony. And members, we are keeping track of hands, and after public testimony, we'll move into Q&A. Up next, Mr. Adosh Uni, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm going to finish off the section on safe and welcoming environment and then touch upon caring qualified educators. The Commissioner mentioned in her opening remarks a couple of the key items from our American Indian Education Package, the first of which is prohibiting American Indian depictions for mascots by schools, by districts and charters, and that would be imagery, mascots, any depiction of them. There, in it lays out the list of depictions that would be prohibited. However, if there is a desire to seek an exemption, the district or charter can seek an exemption from the Tribal Nations Education Committee and the Minnesota Indian Affairs Committee. Commissioner also mentioned an item that we've pursued several times that would require that districts would allow American Indian students to wear culturally significant items at graduation ceremonies, such as an eagle feather. This is something that is largely allowed by districts, but every so often we do hear from some families that there has been some confusion and that there has been some questioning of students' ability to wear it. And we usually reach out to the districts or send a letter out clarifying that a student should be able to wear these traditional items at graduation ceremonies. And that usually takes care of it. But families and students should not have to go through that confusion and should be allowed to be able to wear these traditional regalia at the graduation ceremony. So clarifying in statute would clear that up for everybody, for all students and all administrators and educators. We'd also make it clear that American Indian students would be able to carry sacred tobacco in schools. And this would be narrowly defined to allow it to be done, carried in a medicine pouch. And it would be loose tobacco, and it would be obviously intended to be an observance of traditional spiritual and cultural practices. Next slide, please. Finishing up the American Indian Education Package, we have a range of proposals that this committee has seen in prior legislative packages. We would be seeking to have the Tribal Nations Education Committee, or TNEC, be represented formally in the academic standards revision process. As you know, we engage in the department leads the review and revision process of our academic standards every 10 years. Each topic is reviewed once, and then every 10 years it is then reviewed, and these members would be formally noted in statute. We would add tribal nations as a entity in the already allowed list of entities and uses that districts or charters can share private educational data with, and they can choose to do this. It's not required. It would be voluntary, but this would allow tribal nations to be able to get data from districts and charters on even a daily basis to be able to provide assistance for their students and family members. And this could be anything from academic achievement to attendance records. The American Indian Educator Program Coordinator is a requirement under statute right now for districts that have 100 or more American Indian students. Right now, it is carried out such that this coordinator sometimes takes on other duties. We would be putting into statute clarifying that this coordinator would be specifically dedicated to American Indian education programming. We're seeking some clarifications and modifications to statutes around American Indian Parent Advisory Committees. Every district that has 10 or more American Indian students has American Indian Parent Advisory Committees. And so we're seeking a range of clarifications that the TNAC has sought and parents that we've heard from in the community that specifies appropriate updated language, as well as some responsibilities of school boards and interactions between the Parent Advisory Committees, administrators, and school boards. We would be seeking clarification in state statutes that we're using the state definition and state count of American Indian students. That was a more accurate count of our American Indian students. Currently, the federal definition, if a individual notifies that they are identify as multi-race, one of race, and also as American Indian, that they are designated as the other race or multi-race rather than American Indian, and state definition does allow them to be counted as American Indian students. So that would be a more accurate representation of who our student body is. Associated with that, and a little bit more on top of that, we're clarifying the intended usage and recipients of American Indian education aid. We're clarifying that that's associated with the state count, and additionally, that it is that the American Indian education aid is used first and foremost for American Indian students and programming for them before being used for programming for any other students who would be joining any of those programs. Next slide, please. Moving on to caring and qualified teachers, As Assistant Commissioner Graff noted, as a part of our package for culturally inclusive teaching and learning environments, we'd also be adding cultural responsiveness to both the teacher and principal development and evaluation statutes. This is also in a bill that the committee heard, I believe, last week on the ITCA bill from that Representative Hassan carried. We'd also be looking at removing the prohibitions on Tier 1 teachers as well as ABE and ECFE teachers from joining a bargaining unit. We'd remove the basic skills test from teacher licensure exams or from teacher licensure requirements. And then we'd have an explicit curricula policy that would prohibit discriminating or disciplining a teacher for teaching anything about a federally protected class of people. And with that, I will pass it on over to Assistant Commissioner Jaren Cortier.
Thank you for your testimony. Assistant Commissioner Cortier, if you could please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jaren Cortier, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Student Support Services at the Minnesota Department of Education. And I'm here to walk you through our charter schools and nutrition proposals. So the first proposal is about charter school authorizers. Chapter 124E, the charter school statutes refer to a five-year authorizer term. This term is sometimes misinterpreted as the end of an authorizer's approved status. However, the term really just refers to the performance evaluation system. And so this proposal corrects those inconsistencies to confirm that once an authorizer is an approved authorizer, they continue to remain an approved authorizer until the commissioner either terminates their status or the authorizer formally withdraws. The next proposal is about CMOs and EMOs. This policy aims at increasing the accountability of charter schools and charter management organizations and education management organizations. Charter management organizations, or CMOs, and educational management organizations, or EMOs, contract with charter schools to provide fee-based services such as management, professional development, or business services. This proposal adopts definitions of a CMO and an EMO that increases accountability and provides a mechanism for departmental oversight in order to increase transparency. The proposal is based on a review of model statutes from the National Association of Charter Schools, guidelines found in the Every Student Succeeds Act, and the U.S. Department of Education's Charter School Program Guidance. And the goal is to clarify what charter management and educational management organizations are so that charter schools have a clear understanding of the expectations when working with CMOs and EMOs. The next piece is about market need and demand for charter schools. This policy change responds to concerns about school closure and the impacts of schools that are approved but do not open. This proposal would also address saturation of charter schools in certain communities and districts and encourage the development of charter schools in areas that are not currently served by charter schools. This proposed change asks charter school founders to do more research into local conditions prior to opening a new charter school. This change impacts the federal charter schools program grant as it will allow us to target funds to schools who show evidence of need and demand, and they are more likely to succeed versus schools who may not have sufficient enrollment to meet their budgetary needs. In the prior grant round, over $1 million went to schools that either never opened or closed after 1 year due to lack of enrollment. The goal of this proposal would be to have more research dedicated on the front end of new charter school proposals, which would improve their chances for long-term success. And when new schools can better demonstrate market need and demand, and therefore the likelihood of long-term success, that also decreases disruptions for children and families that choose to attend those schools. And then the next slide, the first proposal is about the English Learners Act. This policy change just clarifies the expectation that charter schools are subject to the provisions of the Education for English Learners Act. MDE has interpreted that charter schools must provide EL services, but there is not clear statutory authority to require this because the provisions are not in charter law. MDE believes that most schools are complying with this, but we have had complaints over time that not all charter schools are following the Education for English Learners Act, and this would make it clear that they must do so. The next proposal is about charter school prioritizing Minnesota students. This is another clarifying proposal The charter school statutes don't have specific language found in other areas of statutes regarding residency of students. MDE's guidance to charter schools is that while they can admit students who don't reside in Minnesota and charge them tuition, Minnesota students should receive enrollment preference over out-of-state students. Next piece is about charter school leases. This proposal just clarifies that charter schools can only lease property from a property owner, and they cannot enter into an agreement to sublease property. The goal of this proposal is to increase transparency, stability, and safety of charter school facilities. Next piece is about affiliated building companies. This would clarify that affiliated building companies, or ABCs, may only support a single school. Charter schools are prohibited by law from purchasing land or buildings with state funds, but they can form an ABC as a nonprofit corporation, which may own a building, land, and then lease it to a charter school. The charter school then receives lease aid from the state to make those lease payments. There are significant operational and financial risks with a single ABC supporting more than one charter school. For example, if an ABC owns multiple facilities and one school in the ABC closes, the other charter schools in the ABC might be required to close as well if they couldn't provide enough lease aid to make the bond payments for the other facilities. This proposal would also alleviate any concerns about conflicts of interest related to board members and issues related to determining square footage or calculation of the annual lease cost for each school. Moving on to the nutrition proposals, there's a number of proposals here. The first would provide consistent procedures for how sites can transfer between sponsors in child nutrition programs. Currently, only sponsors that work with family daycare homes have clear regulations on how often a family child care program can transfer program sponsors. There are currently no regulations about how often a child care center can transfer sponsors. Program sponsors provide training and guidance to local child care providers to ensure that they follow the regulatory obligations required to participate in the programs. And by not having consistent transfer policies across sponsors and sites, it leads to sites requesting transfer partners or requesting site transfers throughout the year, which creates an additional workload for MDE staff and for sponsors with no real benefits to the program or children. Transfers also hurt sponsors who have an established agreement with the center and have trained staff and established systems. The next part of this proposal also restricts sites from transferring to a different sponsor organization to no more than once per year, except under extenuating circumstances. For example, if a site shuts down. The next piece is about sponsoring organizations and their proximity. The regulations state that you're not allowed to open a new site that's operating within close proximity to an existing site. However, that's not defined in the regulations. And so this would create a definition of 1/2 mile so that any new site application within that existing site would not be allowed. But we would create exceptions for culturally appropriate programs and meals if there were physical barriers such as highways or other impediments between the site, or if the sites operated at different or unusual times. The last piece of this larger proposal is about requiring training for staff and sponsoring organizations that covers basic program knowledge. This reduces the amount of time required to approve applications and would increase program integrity by having sponsors understand the basic program requirements and expectations before joining the program. And the last piece just changes the word lunch to meals across all of Minnesota's education statutes to account for and recognize the growth and expansion of the school breakfast program in Minnesota. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Thank you for your testimony. Assistant Commissioner Graff, you are up next. And at 1:50, we are going to move on to public testimonies. Please introduce yourself and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Stephanie Graff, Assistant Commissioner at MDE. I will just go very quickly through this. So first, really wanting to think about extending out the World's Best Workforce legislative report that we submit to you all every year from January 25th to June 30th. as a part of that and thinking about aligning timelines and really giving us an opportunity to consider common deadlines for multiple plans as we streamline and better connect programming for students. Also want to think about pushing the achievement and integration submission, as well as bumping earlier the literacy results submission to MDE to April 15th, and then also changing the date the district testing calendar must be posted to district websites to no later than October 1st or 1 week before the first assessment. And then the first bullet here, aligning state statute with federal law regarding MDE's reporting requirements and practices. These are some very technical changes to align really with the federal Every Student Succeeds Act around the types of measures that we use and are required to use within our state ESSA accountability system. The second bullet, removing references to outdated targets, is also connected to requirements in the federal Every Student Succeeds Act in the way that we look at our growth model. And so this really is a technical fix to better align with the growth model that we have in place. And then lastly, really wanting to be sure that there, you know, the time and resources from the agency that go into legislative reports have a demonstrated value. And so thinking about having expiration dates for report mandates for the agency, while also being sure that there is clarity in communication to the education chairs and the ranking members of the education committees before any reports would expire so that action can be taken.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to move on to public testimony. We have a number of folks signed up. Sydney Spark, our CA, will keep time in the chat, and I will ask folks to ensure that they are staying within the 2 minutes allotted. First up, we have Sophia Khan. Assistant Commissioner Khan, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me some time to speak before you today. My name is Safia Khan, and I'm an Assistant Commissioner and Chief of Staff for the Minnesota Department of Corrections, and I'll try to keep this very short. So you might be wondering what DOC is doing here. I'm really here to support a seemingly small but really mighty provision in House File 3401, and the provision that I'm talking about will expand the priority categories for early learning scholarships to include children who have an incarcerated parent. Many of you on this committee have worked with us and were key to the passage of the Healthy Start Act last session, and this provision will expand on that work to support the children of incarcerated parents in giving them a healthy start in their formative years. In the spirit of quantifying the impact, I just wanted to share some numbers with you that are based on pre-pandemic research done by Dr. Schlafer from the University of Minnesota along with DOC's research team. What we found is that almost 70% of those incarcerated in our state prisons have minor children in the community, and well over half of these parents were living with those children before their arrest. So on any given day in Minnesota, more than 16,000 children under the age of 18 have a parent in our prisons, and that number is about 10,000 for those who are in county jails. And for the age group that we are talking about here, between 30 to 40% of those children who have a parent incarcerated are between the ages of 0 and 5. So Chair and members, as you can well imagine, the impact of a parent's incarceration is devastating on those children. But what we have also learned from hearing directly from family members and caregivers of these children in the community is that it is also very, very difficult for those caregivers who are often grandparents, family members, or volunteer host families through faith-based organizations. What we've also heard a lot about is the impact on the caregivers' employment. Oftentimes we hear that caregivers end up either losing a job or significantly changing their job because of problems with childcare and because of lack of access to childcare. So I'm really here on behalf of Commissioner Schnell today to thank our colleagues at the Department of Education, and thank you, Chair Richardson, for authoring this provision and fully supporting it.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Matt Shaver with EdAllies. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Richardson, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the policy director at EdAllies, which is a state education advocacy nonprofit. Thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts on House File 3401. EdAllies is a part of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. We support policies that would put a stop to the overuse of harmful exclusionary discipline practices that are visited upon students of color and students with disabilities in our schools. We also support the policies in Article 3 that would establish ethnic studies as a requirement, embed standards to include contributions of the indigenous community, and eliminate racist mascots from our schools. Next, we support changing the eligibility criteria for students with limited or interrupted formal education, SLIFE, in Article 1, Section 14. The current definition does not account for younger learners with disrupted learning who are expected to have foundational skills in reading and math in order to access grade level content. The amount and type of supports these students have access to currently is limited largely due to an arbitrary cutoff based on if they arrived in the country after sixth grade or not. Recognizing a child as a SLIFE student by whether or not they have had at least two fewer school years to learn than their peers allows them to access academic support for the years of schooling they have missed due to circumstances outside of their control. SLIFE students require their own unique learning path and deserve an expanded definition so that they can be identified and appropriately supported. One area Ed Allies opposes in this bill is a repeal of an authorizer accountability law that this legislature passed just last year that has not even had the opportunity to take effect. In particular, the proposal on line 68.20 through 68.21 would result in unnecessary harm on students who attend charter schools whose authorizers are in corrective action. We should not punish or push out students for an authorizer's shortcomings. Finally, we'd be interested in hearing more about the rationale behind eliminating definitions related to statewide and local assessments in Article 1, Section 6. Thank you for your time today, and thank you all for your public service.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Maria Cisneros. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre, buenas tardes, miembros del comité y señora presidenta Richard Arston. Estoy agradecida por la oportunidad de estar aquí. Mi nombre es María Cisneros. Nací en Zacatecas, México. Soy madre de seis hermosos hijos. Soy organizadora del Sindicato Nacional de Padres en Minneapolis. Quiero compartir con ustedes las preocupaciones y las realidades relacionadas a la falta de inversión para la educación especial y la educación de inglés como segunda lengua, como segundo idioma. Es fundamental invertir en estos programas para ayudar a nuestros niños a alcanzar sus metas educativas. Estoy aquí para abogar por todos los niños. Y la falta de inversión para la educación especial y la educación de inglés como segundo idioma. Al ver cómo perjudica a todos los niños de nuestras comunidades y la nación del mundo. Es hora de actuar. Ya solo en Minneapolis actualmente tenemos un financiamiento insuficiente de 68 millones de dólares para estos programas, lo que significa que necesitamos utilizar fondos de otras fuentes para llenar los vacíos financieros y depende de nosotros abogar, organizar, movilizar y luchar por nuestras generaciones futuras, a las que se les niega la oportunidad de proporcionar y contribuir en general la medida a nuestra sociedad. Se les permita una oportunidad única hacer lo correcto. Todos los niños merecen una oportunidad de una educación justa y equitativa. Pero ¿cómo se puede hacer esto cuando el financiamiento no es una prioridad para el Estado? La educación especial y el inglés como segundo idioma deben de ser una prioridad para todos nosotros como funcionarios electos, miembros del Comité Político Educativo. Estoy segura de que comprenden estos problemas. Por favor, defiendan a nuestros niños y marquen la diferencia haciendo un cambio ahora. Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Tanya Drawn. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman and committee members. My name is Tonya Drawn, and I am a mother and grandmother. I am also the Minnesota Delegate for the National Parent Union and the Executive Director of Uplift Minnesota. I'm here to testify in support of House File 3401. My experience as a mother and grandmother, as well as working as an advocate for Minneapolis and St. Paul families, is what brings me here today in support of this bill. I have witnessed on too many occasions for many years, the negative impacts of suspensions have on Black and brown children. A parent complaint process would give students and their parents a sense of dignity and a feeling of empowerment, knowing that a complete process would make their voices heard. A formal process is necessary to give the families the dignity and empowerment they deserve. A ban on suspensions for our youngest learners is also a common sense policy. Why would we want to send a message to our youngest children that says, if you mess up, you can't learn here anymore? We must and can do better by them. Let's make sure that our youngest learners are always welcomed in our environments, and let's make sure that they know that we will give them the best experience for their education here in the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Paula Cole. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Really good afternoon, Chair Richardson, members of the committee, also to Commissioner Mueller and other leaders from the Minnesota Department of Education, every guest. My name is Paula Cole, and I'm the Executive Director for Educators for Excellence Minnesota. We are building a critical mass of educators who bring our state closer to eliminating education disparities by socioeconomic status and race. And we really work to ensure that educators' voices sound loud and clear wherever education policies are made. We're also partners with the Solutions Now Suspensions Coalition. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to testify as you hear the proposals within House File 3401. There are many proposals within this bill that E40 members support, but I'd like to dedicate my testimony time to speak in favor of protecting students between the ages of 5 and 9 years old from most school suspensions and exclusions. Listening earlier, Education Commissioner Mueller and Assistant Commissioner Graf just shared a very strong research-based argument to eliminate school suspensions among students in grades K to 3. And the data they share resonates with what we hear from our members each day. Black and brown kids, students living in poverty, and those who have special education needs are overrepresented in disciplinary actions in our schools. Instead of school suspensions, young students need professional support to overcome trauma brought on by violence, homelessness, parent separation, hunger, just to name a few of the triggers that I also saw when I was a teacher. The following quotes were shared to us by our members who would have wished to testify today, but of course are with their students at this time. And these are some quotes from both the metro and outside metro area. So here's what they had to say. Our members, my daughter is having a fit now. They want to share with you that students belong in their classrooms, that they are already struggling to differentiate lessons to the tune of 5 or more lessons each day. And that any child who's excluded from class.
I'm sorry that I'm going to have to stop you, that we're, because we are at time.
Thank you. Thank you. I lost track. I got distracted with my little one has a fever. But thank you for your time and for bringing this up today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Scott Kroonquist. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And today I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Rural Education Association, and Schools for Equity. Thank you for the opportunity to share a few comments about House File 3401. I'm going to focus my testimony on our strong support for Article 1, beginning with Section 9 of the bill, the changes that would modernize Minnesota's online learning law. The online learning statute was originally adopted in 2003. And as you know, the world has changed dramatically since then. Students today have never known a world without smartphones, tablets, and laptops. And if you're like me, when you have a technology question, you might turn to your kids or maybe your grandkids for help. Over the past 2 years, our school districts have become highly proficient at delivering online instruction. As we emerge from the pandemic, we now have the opportunity to use this expertise that we have gained in the area of digital learning to greatly enhance and personalize learning opportunities for our students. We know disruptions have been great during the pandemic and have had a negative impact on student achievement. And of course, we also know that before the pandemic, we had unacceptable opportunity and achievement gaps. But now we can use the expertise and experience that our teachers, staff, and students have gained through digital learning to provide more opportunities and better personalized learning. The potential is enormous. For years, we have had discussions about redesigning education, and in particular about redesigning the high school experience. There is a tremendous interest among our students in having greater access to work-based experiences and other experiential learning opportunities. Online learning can be the vehicle to open up these possibilities and provide access to a wide array of opportunities, whether it's rigorous course offerings or credit recovery. The possibilities really are limitless. So thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to share a few comments, and thank you to the Governor and Commissioner Mueller for including this important proposal in the MDE policy bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Roger Aronson. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, and I represent the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association. Prior to the session, our groups had the opportunity to meet with the department, visit about the provisions that are in this bill, and offer some feedback. As you might note, the bill contains over 100 provisions, and it covers a very broad scope of topics. We believe that you as policymakers should carefully review the provisions to make certain that the legislation does exactly what you intend. We have concerns about some provisions in the bill. We have a concern about prohibiting suspensions of all students in grades through K-3. Elementary principals believe that students who have hurt another student or pose a safety threat may indeed need to be suspended, and we propose some modification of that language to say suspensions of K-3 should be limited to students who pose a safety threat. That's not here in the bill. We have concern about school suspension changes, that non-exclusionary discipline, for example, as it's being used to removal from class provisions, it raises the question of how a student may be removed from a classroom but required to be in the classroom at the same time while non-exclusionary discipline interventions occur. We question schools' ability to monitor progress of students who've been expelled. We have concern about the description of language on restrictive procedures as clarifying. In fact, we believe the extension of the Restrictive Procedures Act to all students may be the most expansive mandate that's here in the statute. We also have concerns about establishing new mandates in the Safe and Supportive Schools Act language that's here. Madam Chair, we agree with the goals of this bill to make schools inclusive and welcoming. We continue to work towards this goal, not only with our own groups, but with stakeholders in the education community. We continue to train, educate, improve practices of principals, teachers, and staff throughout Minnesota, and we look forward to working with you with those goals in mind.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Caitlin Snyder. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. We represent over 86,000 active and retired educators across the state. Thank you, Commissioner Mueller and the Minnesota Department of Education for bringing forward a bill to help support the needs of our students and schools. We strongly support advancing solutions to non-exclusionary disciplinary practices, because we know our students can't learn if they're not in the classroom. We support items from the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers. We support the multi-tiered systems of support definition, the anti-discrimination in our PSEO statutes language, and protection for teachers who teach honest history lessons. We support protections for our American Indian students, including the tribal consultation language. We support protecting Tier 1 teachers' ability to join a bargaining unit like any other teacher. And we support providing continuing contract protections for adult basic education teachers and early childhood family education teachers. However, we have some concerns about some of the changes to the online learning statute. The current system requires a thoughtful implementation of online learning. It is not as simple as just turning on a camera. There are many misunderstandings that happen with the statute, such as districts trying to outsource their online learning to people not licensed in the state of Minnesota, or prohibiting these teachers from joining the bargaining unit. Removing this approval will lead to good faith mistakes on the part of districts that will take months to unwind. We urge your consideration of this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. The final individual signed up for public testimony is Kim Hagel. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee. I'm Kim Haugo, licensed school library and media specialist. I work at Maple Grove Senior High, but I'm here on behalf of the Information and Technology Educators of Minnesota and Minnesota Library Association in support of Line 78 and House File 3401. In March 2020, Minnesota students were divided into those who had access to a licensed media specialist and those who did not. This resulted in very different distance learning experiences, which impacted academic performance. For example, every student in ISD 279 had access to and support from a licensed media specialist. Those professionals were prepared to support staff, students, and their families in either how to teach or how to learn using a virtual platform. They were instrumental in one-to-one device and Wi-Fi hotspot deployment as needed. Every student had a professional dedicated to selecting, purchasing, and promoting digital resources like ebooks and audiobooks, which allowed for equitable, accessible reading, listening, and learning opportunities. Unfortunately, too many students in our state didn't have this experience. They attended schools who claim to have a school library, but there is no program, no licensed professional hired to choose and promote age-appropriate books to ignite love of literature or to manage the collection, to work with teachers to find materials to supplement curriculum, to assist with technology, or to ensure that digital literacy and citizenship skills are being taught. Too many schools use volunteers or hire paraprofessionals to run their school libraries, but the tasks they can legally perform in Minnesota is limited. For instance, although they may check out and reshelve books, they may not select and purchase them. A licensed school library media specialist can. Today, in the interest of students, we ask you to ensure that schools who have a school library make sure they are served by a licensed media specialist. Fun fact, 1 month into distance learning, Governor Waltz proclaimed April 20th, 2020, as School Library Media Specialist Day. Thank you for the continued support of your school library professionals.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Haugo, and apologies for mispronouncing your name. And I misspoke. We have one more individual signed up for public testimony. Kulia Pringle, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, committee members. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I'm with the National Parents Union. I'm also, we're also a member of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, as well as Dignity of Schools, a national organization aimed at ending school pushout. I'm here to support the provisions in House File 3401. I want to highlight three portions of the bill that myself, as well as my community, have been advocating for many years, particularly the ban on K through three suspensions, the parent complaint process, and using attendance and truancy as a ways of discipline. My personal experience, as well as me working in the Black and Brown community, has brought me here to testify in support of this bill. This bill means the difference between if a child gets the opportunity to learn how to read or die, read or life as a criminal, or read and a life in poverty. This bill is a step forward for ed justice for Black, Brown children, Indigenous children, and students with special education. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on to member questions, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and a few points. First, I think Assistant Commissioner Graff, I'd like to address this too. I agree that student discipline should not be administered on the basis of race or anything else. It should be for the whatever the alleged need is. And I do share concerns about exclusion and suspensions. I'm glad that you emphasize the need for a safe learning environment. But I also want to know if this is also true for teachers and staff. If a student physically attacks a teacher or staff member, what is the remedy?
Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl. Right. So, you know, the use of restrictive procedures, right, in the case where a student may be in a position of harming themselves or others still remains in place, right? And the pieces around that. And in fact, we do want to expand restrictive procedures to not just include students with disabilities, but certainly for all students as well. And so, you know, in agreement in those situations that there would need to be protocol and actions taken. And with, you know, with that sort of more broadly thinking about particularly particularly our youngest students, our students that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, right? Making sure that there is very intentional, very focused and guided support for our educators to think about alternative responses and, you know, non-exclusionary practices that we can put into place, and really thinking about trauma. Some of our speakers today, trauma-informed support, mental health services, thinking about social emotional learning and supporting students in regulating their behavior, right? And dealing with hard situations, supporting schools in positive behavior interventions, right? And supports as well. So thinking about those alternatives to removal from the classroom, certainly as a critical part of our proposals here as well.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Assistant Commissioner Graff. I think this is something that we need to closely look at. It does happen with younger children, and I'm concerned about the child themselves. What is going to be the solution for helping them? So I think that's part of a longer discussion. Assistant Commissioner Burnham, I'm glad that you are clarifying the credit for art in this. I'm wondering, are there other areas that might need some clarification regarding credit? Maybe like civics.
Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I'm not sure I have a clear answer for that today, but I will get with our team and get back to you on that.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. And if you need any help on forming a decision like that, feel free to contact me. And now, one last thing, and also Assistant Commissioner Burnham. Regarding Indigenous education, and I think that's important, the language, the culture. But I'm wondering, maybe this is a question if there was someone from our colleges and universities here, do our teacher training institutions offer courses for teachers in this? And if they don't, what is the solution to that?
Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is a great question, Representative Erdahl. And I don't know enough detail at this point around those types of offerings in institutions of higher education, but would be glad to do some digging and get some information back to you. I could reach out to TNEC as well as our Director of Office of Indian Ed to get you some information.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. And just summing up then, if we are going to require that certain things be taught, we have to make sure that there are people who are trained to teach it. And that's something that I think needs to be looked at. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would be happy to help with that.
Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. I think there are a couple pieces. There are some institutions that do provide that, not as a requirement for their teacher preparation programs, but there are institutions that do provide classes around focused on Indigenous education. There is also language that we have included around teacher licensure, and in order to be able to also maintain teacher licensure as we specific hours, CEU hours, focused on Indigenous education, specifically American Indian relicensure programs, both culturally in language and then in providing historical and current contexts. And so those are a couple of places. In addition, there also is some pieces where there's access to curricular resources that schools may utilize that are come directly from the tribes that would also help with the implementation of Indigenous education for all.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you for that. I think that I think it's important for our colleges and universities to have a consistent model throughout the state to do this. And if they aren't doing so, I think that they need to get into that. But I'm glad to know there's some things going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are for Commissioner Mueller.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Commissioner Mueller. I was glad that Roger Aronson noted that there are 100 policy changes. He did not mention that there are more than a dozen mandates. So would you explain to us how this is going to produce a world-class education? When will teachers have time to learn? And when will learn how to teach some of this? And how will students have time to recover their lost learning?
Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I think that there's a couple of pieces in looking at being able to utilize a Minnesota multi-tiered system of support. It does look at what you are able to provide for not only remediation, but also acceleration of learning. It focuses in the areas of not only literacy, but also in math and social emotional learning and mental health, and supports around behavior and positive behavior interventions and support. And so being able to utilize that framework is one area that we know that is able to be focused on. We also know that being able to have a clear and consistent understanding around the bold literacy model with the inclusion of science for reading is helpful in providing additional support to schools. We know that in partnerships that we have had with our school leaders, that there is time that schools do have to be able to help to focus specifically in on some of these areas. And the inclusivity of that environment allows students to have an environment in which they are able to succeed.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. But I disagree with you on the multi-tiered support system, because the new language is primarily premised on inclusiveness and culture. And, that's not going to really be focused on reading and math skills and knowledge. And besides, your BOLD program does not include letters. It's it offers a variety of paths and many different programs. My next question is, why would you amend the compulsory education law to include non-public and homeschools?
Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Erickson. I am going to go back just for a minute, because I think that there's a misunderstanding and misrepresentation of a multi-tiered system of support. The basic premise of a multi-tiered system of support is foundation around academics, and it starts in the areas of literacy and math. There are multiple sides of a triangle, right? And so when you look at that, it's in the area of literacy, it is in the area of math, and those serve as a foundation. There's also the space around behavior. And so when you look at what all students need to know and be able to do, it's based on the core and the foundations of literacy, mathematics specifically, as well as behavior and supports. So I just wanted to go back and clarify that, because that's a misunderstanding and misconception. The second piece is looking at compulsory education. There are some pieces that we know that are good that we need to be able to help to provide supports for all students. And so when we look at what we need, what we want all students to know and be able to do across the state of Minnesota, there are some places where we have basic expectations. And so being able to lay that foundation of what that might look like is one place to be able to do that.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And why have you expanded the definition of ethnic studies when ethnicity actually refers to culture? But your definition is so expansive. I mean, what will you accomplish by having a definition that is so broad?
Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and Representative Erickson. In partnership with a number of our partners and external stakeholders, what we know is that, yes, looking at ethnicity and culture is one piece of what that looks like. But we also know that looking at ethnic studies is also a broader component. And so in order to be inclusive, in order to be able to recognize that each student and who they are and what their background is does matter when they walk into that classroom, and to give opportunities, not requirements, but opportunities for students to be able to learn from a diverse teacher pool, as well as to be able to learn from diverse perspectives and backgrounds, is something that is incredibly important.
Representative Erickson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, you know very well that we have a definition of cultural competency, culturally competent, and cultural competence in statute. It's 120B.30. And that is something that Representative Mariani and I put together. Mm-hmm. And that's the ability of families and educators to interact effectively with different cultures, native language, and socioeconomic background. So your definition far exceeds that. And, you know, with parents and educators trying to interact on these issues, they can't have so many broad areas to cover, because they'll never solve the issues that are affecting their children. And we know very well that one of them is culture. And we also know that, you know, speaking different languages is an issue that parents are confronted with when their children enter our schools and may not speak English. And we know that poverty has been an issue in the closing of the achievement gap, which, by the way, you don't address at all in this proposal. So thank you, Madam Chair, for for your indulging my comments and encouraging the commissioner to rethink some of the proposals in this policy bill. Thank you.
Commissioner Mueller, I was going to call you representative, but Commissioner Mueller, that is, in fact, who you are.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think that a couple of pieces is that in order to look at being able to support the achievement gap and to close the achievement gap, we also have to be able to look at the systemic barriers that are created and that have been in existence. And so in order to close the achievement gap, we need to not only look at the systemic barriers, but we also need to be able to look at the types of ways that we're able to provide support to schools. And that's not only included in our policy, but also in our budget bill. And so I look forward to further conversations.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, this might be for you or might be for Assistant Commissioner Graff, but I'm wondering if you could talk about the conversations that the department has had to address some of the things we heard from students, specifically the racism, discrimination, and bullying that they're facing in schools. I know there was some talk about social emotional learning being a piece of addressing that, but if you can talk more holistically maybe about how this bill addresses that, I would be interested to hear that. Thank you.
Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, and thank you, Representative Wasilek, and please know Assistant Commissioner Graff, please hop in if you feel as though I'm missing something. I think what we know is that being able to set up systems and structures that are culturally inclusive, that are inclusive of all students' voice, and especially student voice, is something that we are looking at in a safe and welcoming environment. Being able to establish within a multi-tiered system of support and also be able to be social emotional learning is to be able to help build relationship models and very specific instruction. Just as we teach academics, which is a core and foundation of what we do, we have always historic as an education system taught behavior as well and taught social emotional learning and how to interact with peers. And so that is a place where it gives student voice the opportunity to come together and talk about places and spaces where we need to be able to grow in a foundation of what all students need to know and be able to do. And so there is work that is done within that we believe is important. And I don't know if Assistant Commissioner Graff, you have anything to add to that.
Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and Commissioner. I think you really, you know, you really covered it. And this is the work that our School Climate Center really leads on. And it is done in partnership at the agency with our newly established Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center as well, right? So as we think about our supports around, you know, bullying prevention, social emotional learning, making sure that students have skills, right, when they may struggle socially, right, that can sometimes result in aggressive behavior, right, or sort of other behavior towards students, that we are able to come in and think about our restorative practices, right, and our responsiveness with trauma-informed support, with our you know, it really anti-bias kind of support across our training for school systems. And I just wanted to, you know, just say that that really is our team at the agency within our School Climate Center and our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center that is doing the work that the commissioner is really talking about, rolling up their sleeves alongside school leaders and educators to make sure that we're creating environments that are safe and inclusive and respectful of all students. And when there are incidents, that we are able to respond quickly to be able to provide that support immediately, should that be something that a school leader wants.
Representative Wasilek, any follow-up?
No, that was it. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the testifiers for providing some information.
Thank you, Rep. Wasilek. With that, I lay over House File 3401 for further consideration. As a reminder, our next meeting is on Wednesday, March 2nd. We'll be hearing four more bills regarding student health. There being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.